And welcome back to episode 2 of NurseCasts, the podcast by nurses for nurses. I'm Joe Morita, Senior Nursing Acquisitions Editor at Springer Publishing Company. This week, we have a great episode in store for you. Recently, I was in Villanova, Pennsylvania to visit with faculty and students at the College of Nursing at Villanova University. I learned how patients with disabilities are helping to teach undergraduate students, and the results have been very positive. With us today, we have Suzanne Smeltzer, who is an internationally known scholar, researcher, educator, and author. Dr. Smeltzer is professor and director of the Center for Nursing Research at the Villanova University College of Nursing. We also have the director of the Simulation and Learning Resource Center, Colleen Meekham. And lastly, we have Betty Mariani, who's an assistant professor of nursing at the school. In this podcast, we'll hear from students, patients, and faculty to better understand the impact this program is having within the Villanova community. We start with Colleen Meekham, director of the Simulation and Learning Resource Center at Villanova. Colleen, could you tell us about the simulation lab here at Villanova?
Sure. We're very fortunate here at Villanova. We have a very wonderful simulation lab space. Actually, the whole ground floor of our building encompasses our simulation lab environment. And we have spaces that are used by students from the freshman year until the senior year, and the spaces are adaptable to whatever it is that we're doing in the various courses throughout the time that the students are here. So students do start at the end of their freshman year having scenarios, and they continue on until their senior year when they're in home health doing that. That is the last scenario that they do as seniors.
Could you tell me about how they work with both mannequins and standardized patients and how you guys define a standardized patient?
Students work with both mannequins and standardized patients throughout the time that they're here doing their simulation experiences. Sometimes they work with a mannequin alone, but most of the time someone speaks for that mannequin. And so we hire people that are professional standardized patients who do this, you know, across the Philadelphia area. We also hire people with disabilities that we're going to be speaking about today, who are people that serve special roles for us in our simulation program. I also hire students from other parts of the university to take on these roles for us. So we use them in multiple ways. They could be the voice of a mannequin. They could assume a patient role themselves, or they could be a family member or some other healthcare provider, depending upon what the situation is. And a standardized patient could include any of those roles. We call it standardized patient because that's the term that was coined many years ago, but they could be a simulated patient, family member, healthcare provider, or whatever.
Could you explain how the simulation lab is integrated into the education?
Yes, our students use simulation experiences to augment what is available to them in the clinical environment or to prepare them for what might be coming in the clinical environment. So as freshmen, they only come a couple of times to the simulation area to learn basic skills such as vital signs and hand washing. And then they have an experience at the end of their freshman year that's a culminating experience. As sophomores, their students are here every week because they're learning the fundamentals of nursing through health assessment and their nursing essential skills. And they're here every week and learning those basic skills while at the same time having simulation experiences that are built upon, you know, throughout those two semesters that they're here as sophomores. When they become juniors and seniors, most of the time the students are here in the beginning of a course for a skill type of an experience, and then they follow that up later in the semester or the rotation with a simulation experience that's focused on whatever the content is of that course that they're taking at that time. We do occasionally test students, mostly at the sophomore level, and also one experience as seniors in pediatrics.
You were kind enough to give me a tour of the simulation lab, which is extremely impressive. And I believe you said it was opened in 2008. Could you tell me just a little bit about that and how you think it may have improved the education for the students here at Villanova?
So we did do simulation experiences in our previous location, but we did move here in 2008, which gave us a whole greater breadth of options for our students just because of the enhanced space that we had. It also provides faculty with lots of opportunities to observe students and their critical thinking abilities as they work through scenarios. I believe that students have benefited from this because they are often better prepared for things that they have to do in clinical because of the opportunities that they've had in the simulation environment.
Suzanne, could you tell us about the program of simulation using people with disabilities as standardized patients?
Absolutely. The program here at Villanova is somewhat unique in that there are standardized patients in many other programs in undergraduate nursing and in medicine and some of the other disciplines. The inclusion of people with disabilities as standardized patients is, as I say, relatively unique. And we've been doing that for about 4 years now. I believe we started in 2012. And how all of this got started was based on the fact that I've been doing research related to issues, health issues of people with disabilities for 20 plus years. And one of the things that my research has shown, as well as the research of other researchers, is that people with disabilities tend to receive health care that is compromised, in large part because health profession education does not include the topic of disability to any extent. And so our program started with trying to rectify that situation beginning here at Villanova by adding people with disabilities as standardized patients.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you found these people with disabilities to participate?
The people that we have recruited have come from a variety of strategies. I am pretty well connected to some of the disability organizations, and a phone call to one group resulted in us recruiting, I believe, initially about 7 or 8 people. Subsequently, we have reached out to some other organizations. The other way is that several of us know people, friends, sometimes relatives, who have disabilities and have told them about the program, and they have been interested and come aboard as a result.
And how do you think the program has done? Has it been successful in doing the things that you were hoping it would do?
Yes, it has. It has introduced students to people with disabilities from the very early part of their education. We begin with a communication scenario when the students are freshmen, and so this is their very first semester in their freshman year. We have developed some videos using one of our standardized patients in which we illustrate how to communicate effectively with somebody with a disability and how not to communicate with somebody with a disability. And then the subsequent scenarios have built on that. The communication is an extremely important thread that we expect students to carry with them all the way through the program. So when they're learning something else related to caring for somebody with standardized patients, they're still expected to know how and demonstrate how to communicate with them effectively.
Betty, has there been an improvement on the students' part after working with these standardized patients?
Actually, I have seen a difference in the students in terms of their responses and their reactions to working with people with disability. But more than that, we have done some research, and our research has shown in both the qualitative research and in the quantitative research that there are differences in students from when they started the program to when they finished the program in terms of their perceptions and comfort with working with people with disability. In addition, I have had students come to me and tell me that these experiences have done a lot to help them understand how to care for people with disability. And some of them, for example, we have a scenario in their senior year where they care for a person with an amputation. And many of them have never even gotten the opportunity to see a person with an amputation. So even just that opportunity has really opened their eyes to caring for people with disability.
Do you think it has an impact on their work with patients without disabilities as well?
Well, I think some of the concepts that we address can be applicable to all patients. You know, the foundation of the people with disability simulations is the communication scenario that they start with in freshman year. And so that is really something that they take with them in every course, with any interaction that they have with a patient in any setting, whether it be, you know, in a hospital, extended care facility, a international experience, wherever they would be going, they take that communication with them.
So you guys have had this program with working with people with disabilities as standardized patients at Villanova for about 5 years. What's your feedback? What do you think about how well this program is doing, any of the three of you?
I mean, I have the opportunity to work with senior level students mostly. And so in seeing the senior level students talk about it and relate their experiences with it, I think that the program is doing extremely well. We have also had the opportunity to go out and talk a lot about the program through, you know, local, regional, national, international conferences. And through those, I think we've had some far-reaching effects as to the importance to educating nurses and other healthcare professionals about caring for people with disability.
This is Colleen, and as a director of the Sim Lab, I feel like I've been able to see a great growth in the students because I see them come through from freshman year through senior year, and they are very nervous as freshmen, even as sophomores. I don't think they quite understand exactly what the purpose is of doing this, and ultimately somewhere along the way, and because of the repetitive nature of them having these interactions with people with disabilities from freshman year through senior year, ultimately they get it, and that's really nice to see.
One of the things that Betty just mentioned is that we've had the opportunity to do many presentations, you know, at the, going from a very local level to an international level. And one of the things that we find is that a number of people have said to us, gee, I never thought about that, even the topic of disability. It is not something that comes to mind because most faculty, when they were going through their programs, did not learn about disability. And so they are somewhat taken aback, you know, that we've got this program about disability because it's something they never thought about. And part of our job, part of our task, is to increase the awareness of the importance of addressing this topic in curricula, in nursing curricula, as well as in other healthcare disciplines, because it does not exist there either.
To understand how nursing students felt about the program, we sat down with seniors Devin Gavea, Kelly Gelman, and Dana Fish to get their take on how the program has impacted their lives. Here's Devin, senior at Villanova's School of Nursing. Could you tell me about your experience working with Shelley Hauser?
I worked with Shelley my junior year in the maternal child health course when we were caring for a woman who had just given birth, and Shelley has a disability. And I think the biggest thing that I had gained from that scenario was that prior to learning about how to care for patients with disabilities, I was very uncomfortable approaching the subject, if that makes sense. I didn't know if it was appropriate to acknowledge the disability because I didn't want to act like it was the one thing that I was focused on with the patient. But one of the things that Shelley really enforced was that you should acknowledge that disability because it is a part of her life and it is something she has to deal with, and you don't want to seem ignorant of it, that you're not acknowledging it. And so you learn how to acknowledge disability and see what you can do for Shelley, because Shelley can do a lot on her own, but it's how, like, you can just help her and enhance her experience.
Devin, what did you learn by working with these people with disabilities?
Since freshman year, I've definitely gotten so much more comfortable taking care of patients with disabilities. Even in the clinical settings when I've had patients with disabilities, I think the experience that Villanova has given me has been great because I have experienced it in the simulation lab, so I'm prepared when I encounter one of my own patients who has a disability. I'm not scared, I guess, to interact with them as maybe students who don't have this experience would be.
So did you find that they were more comfortable discussing their disabilities than you expected?
Absolutely. I thought it would be almost a negative thing that maybe they didn't want to talk about it because they wanted me to ignore it and treat them like someone without a disability, but it's something that they have had, most of them have had for almost their whole life. So it's a huge part of them. So they are very willing to talk about it, and they want you to acknowledge it and to ask them questions about it and care about what they have to go through.
Do you think it helped you work with patients who don't have disabilities at all?
I think so. I think it made me more aware of maybe other things that patients have going on. It may not be a physical disability, but it could be a mental disability or some sort of psychological issue that may not be present right away. But I think holistically, there are a lot of things going on with people that you may not see right away. And so it's given me the opportunity to just think about different things that patients may be going through and to try to like understand how you can best care for them with whatever is going on.
Hi, my name is Kelly Gilman. I'm a senior here at the College of Nursing at Villanova University, and I'm in the four-year traditional program for BSN.
And could you tell me about your experience with Mary Lou Bradley?
Mary Lou, I got to work with her sophomore year. I don't remember the scenario, but she was the first standardized patient that I got to sit down with, and she, in our debriefing of the scenario, she asked us, because there was a group of nurses, student nurses around her, and she said, just keep firing out questions. She said, even if they're like strange or whatever, like it's better that you ask now and know what you're going to do later in the future. So it was like simple things like, do I sit or stand when you're sitting? Like, how should I position myself? Because we had to, the scenario was getting her out of bed and working with that. But she was just very open. And during that scenario, that's when I really felt open to ask questions with the standardized patients so I could learn to improve my care with other patients with disabilities later in the clinical setting.
What do you think you learned by working with these people with disabilities?
The biggest thing I've learned is that working with the standardized patients with disabilities, they have independence. They get through life, like Devin has said, it's something that they live with and it's part of their life. And coming into Villanova, I always thought, okay, how am I going to help this person? I'm going to be like almost like a helicopter and stand over top of them and just watch everything that they do and make sure they're okay. But through the 4 years in this program, I've learned that they are independent, and it's more what can you do for them and not so much standing over top of them and watching them constantly.
Dana, could you tell me about your experience with Shelley Hauser?
Yes, I worked with Shelley both my junior and senior year. My junior year, she did our maternal child rotation. She was a mom who had just given birth. And it was really interesting to see how we worked with her disability, worked her disability into her plan of care, because she was fully capable of caring for her children, and just to be in the hospital and you want to make sure you want to send your patients home with like the most safety, and you always want to be sure. And so it was very difficult for us at first to kind of think about how we were going to ask her the difficult questions about how she moved at home, how she handled her babies and then other children that she may have had at home. But she was very comfortable talking to us, very confident, very capable in her abilities. So like Kelly and Devin have said, it was all about remembering that you ask what you can do for the patient, not tell the patient what they're going to do.
And could you tell me about your experience with Mary Lou Bradley?
Yes, I worked with Mary Lou my sophomore year as well. And it was a musculoskeletal lab. So we were working on movement and kind of coordination and getting her into bed, out of bed and everything. So it was a very physical lab. And we just had to remember that we were always asking her how she wanted to do her, how she wanted to move, how we could help her in the most effective way that worked for her. And so being sophomores, we're still kind of new to the whole nursing situation. So it was a little difficult to kind of get out of the train of thought of telling the patient that they're going to do something and then being there and hoping they do it right, and kind of remembering that you need to ask the patient how they get, what the easiest way for them to get out of bed is, and then you just are there to assist them. So Mary Lou was really patient with us and very helpful and kind of reminding us that just to ask and just to be open with her, and then she was open and helpful and very friendly with us.
And what do you think you learned by working with these people with disabilities?
Definitely the same things Devin and Kelly have said, that you're there to support them and to help them, and you're kind of their aid in this situation. They live a life outside of the hospital, and I think sometimes we forget that and we want to make sure everything's perfect and better, but they've survived this far. They've excelled in their life this far. So we're kind of there to just aid them back to their optimal health and to get them home where they're perfectly functioning perfectly well at home. And so we just have to remember to support them.
Thinking about your next step as a nurse? Whether you're looking into BSN, MSN, DNP programs, or just looking for a new nursing job at a local hospital, the online nursing career fairs at Springer Publishing Company can help. The career fairs will provide you with a chance to get an exclusive look at opportunities within top nursing employers and nursing programs across the U.S. Register for one of 10 online career events and chat with recruiters from the comfort of your own home using your phone or PC. Log on to dailynurse.com to learn more today. To understand the experience of standardized patients, we were able to connect by phone with Mary Lou Bradley and Shelley Hauser. Here's Mary Lou. Mary Lou, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, I can tell you I am a 56-year-old female. I had a stroke when I was a 20-year-old college student that left me with left-sided weakness, and I have no use of my left arm, but I can walk and everything. I use the left leg, but it is weaker than the right. And that's how I got involved with this type of program.
Okay, and could you tell me a little bit about that? How did you come to find out about the Villanova program, and then what exactly do you do there?
One of my good friends is one of the nursing professors at Villanova, and she approached me asking if I was interested in getting involved with this program because of my physical issues. And I actually jumped at the chance because I thought it was such an important thing, is to get this awareness and information out into the medical field.
Okay, and so you do one specific simulation, is that right?
I actually do multiple simulations. I do a couple of the ones that all of the other SPs with disabilities do, but I also do OBGYN scenarios because I did have my children after this physical problem.
Okay, could you sort of...
So I do OBGYN scenarios as well.
Could you kind of walk us through a scenario or two and what you do and how you interact with the students?
Well, I guess starting with the freshmen, and the freshmen, because they have never actually dealt with a live patient, they work on each other as standardized patients, but they've never had the interaction with someone outside of the nursing program. So with those, with the freshmen, it's usually pretty basic. They're trying to teach you and help you learn, and it's about coming into maybe the emergency room with chest pains or things, and they have to figure out how to get you the information that you need. They might take vital signs and go from there, but they get the chance to work on their communication skills with patients. Once you get to the sophomores, it's a little bit more involved of a process because they know more. So they might do some things about finding ways for you to handle your situation. As the students get older and know more and more, then the scenarios become more involved.
Okay, that sounds great. If you could also tell us a little bit about the OBGYN scenario.
Sure, when I do the OBGYN scenarios, I have to pretend that I am a brand new mother getting ready to come home from the hospital with an infant, and they do a discharge plan and talk about things like safety in the home, and do you have someone at home to help you? How do you handle a newborn baby with only the use of one arm and things like that? So they have to try to figure out all the different angles and all the ways that the physical disability would affect coming home with a newborn, and work out the problems and make solutions.
And do you find that the students are hesitant at first to talk about your disability?
Well, sometimes I find that they are, because it is a little bit scary. Now, my children have grown up with it, so it's not to them. But it's sort of a sensitive issue, and I try to open up to the kids. At the end of each scenario that I do, I offer up my time for questions. Any questions that they want to ask me that will help them in dealing with their patients, I'm happy to help them.
And how does it make you feel working with the students in this kind of program?
Well, I actually actually, I get nervous. I know they're nervous, but I get nervous as well because some of the scenarios are learning, some are testing. And if they're getting tested, then I'm always nervous that I'll mess them up. You know, either you're not allowed to give them too much information because they are being tested, but then again, you want to get them down the right path. So that gets difficult. But I have found that it's very rewarding working with the students. I have some that I worked with as freshmen that I see then again as juniors and seniors, and they remember. I had a girl recently tell me I was her first ever live real patient, and she remembered me 4 years later. So it is nice to know that what we're doing sticks with them and they can carry it on through to their medical career.
And how many years have you been doing this now?
I started when they started the program. I'd say it's probably been... Oh, gosh, time goes so fast. It's got to be 5 or 6 years, though.
And do you learn anything doing these scenarios with the students?
I actually learn a little bit more about what it's like from the other end of, say, the stethoscope, to put it into medical terms, because I'm used to looking at it from the patient standpoint, but in this situation, I get to look at it also from the medical personnel standpoint and with the challenges that they face and what they might be walking into.
Okay, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about the program and your work with the students?
I just think it's an amazing program and that Villanova is very cutting edge with this because I don't think that they have this at very, very many other nursing schools in the country. And with the way the population of the United States at least is going, there are more and more and more things that are described as disabilities, and I think that in the medical profession, people are going to come across a lot of situations, and if they have this background, that it's going to help them in their futures.
A theme that we've picked up from everybody is how important communication is, and it sounds like the work that you and some of the other standardized patients are doing is they're really helping the students understand that importance.
Well, I really do think that's important, and as I tell the students when they ask me what advice I would give them, I always end with, don't assume that your patient can't do something because that can be insulting to them. I tell them that they're better off if they say to the patient, if there's something I can do to help you, let me know. That way they're putting it on the patient and they're not making assumptions about what the person can and can't do.
We also connected by phone with Shelley Hauser, a mother of three and a standardized patient within the nursing program.
I grew up in Pennsylvania. I'm a mother of three boys and been married 20 years. Congenitally, my disability is a congenital hemipelvectomy, which is a rare birth defect where I was born without any hip or any right leg. But I wear a prosthetic since 6 months old, and I work full time and am very active in the community with a variety of activities.
And how did you come to be involved with the program at Villanova?
There was another amputee who was kind of ran in the same groups I did in the community. And they were short an amputee to come out and do this. And so I came out and I tried it out and it was a lot of fun. And I think it was almost 4 years ago. And since then, we've just, you know, I meet twice a year in the spring session and in the fall session. And I've met new friends. And made some acquaintances, and it's just been a really great, it's just been a win-win situation for the students, for the faculty, and for us as amputees to be able to tell our story and to share our challenges.
Could you tell us about the simulation or simulations that you perform with the students?
There are two. One is with congestive heart failure or COPD as a amputee, and that one is very interesting because I need to make sure as the amputee working with the students and the staff to hit all the points of what the staff wants students to learn. So we go through the simulation and the answers, but often the students don't pick up on how the amputation and the fact that I'm not able to put my prosthetic leg on due to some sudden weight gain in a short amount of time, they're not piecing the puzzle together as to why that matters. So in that simulation, I say, okay, I am a, 40-some or whatever year old woman. I've gained 6 pounds in a few days. I'm lethargic. I can't get my prosthetic on. I'm not getting my exercise. I'm, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I'm on new medication. What is the big problem with this? And I say, if I put my prosthetic leg on, it's going to cause a lot of skin breakdown and swelling and then blistering, and then it'll take longer to heal. Sometimes a month, 2 months with some of my amputee friends from what I hear from them. And, you know, but if I don't put my prosthetic on, it causes a muscle risk, you know, because I'm tired and I'm on new medication. And so I make them kind of walk through, from my perspective or any amputee's perspective, what to look for and why it's so important. So we talk about a lot of those things. The other piece that I do for the staff there is an OB simulation. This is the first in the nation, and we are all very, very proud of this, that the staff came to me and we wrote this simulation together of my case history of being a 30-year-old woman with a second C-section full-term baby, with going home with a 2.5-year-old at home as a hemipelvectomy. And what services should I have? How am I going to get around walking on crutches with these stitches that I'm not supposed to be pulling? How am I going to transfer that newborn? How am I going to run after the 2.5-year-old? And we talk about all those scenarios. We talk about what was not done for me at all at that time. I was, you know, I sat in an office chair and I mopped the kitchen floor, and I would take my laundry in a basket that had wheels on it and put the baby in it and push the baby back and forth by myself on crutches.
And just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just to be clear, so this is really something that you went through, and you guys use that as a basis for a simulation.
Yeah, so at that time, almost 16 years ago at this point, there was no home care nurse. There was no wheelchair for me temporarily. There was no anything, and I figured it all out for myself with all three of my pregnancies. My family all moved out of state, and my in-laws were not available to assist with me on that. So I figured if I wanted to be a mother, I needed to figure it out on my own. And so that was what I did. So it was really important. And the staff and the students are perplexed as to why I didn't have all those services. But at that time, it wasn't talked about. You know, I know it was only 18 or 16 years ago at most, but so we were on a verge of having that conversation through the university and the staff, which were so brilliant, in my opinion, of thinking to tell the story. I mean, I just had never had that opportunity to tell my story before. So it was wonderful to share that.
And could you tell me, one of the major themes that the students have brought up has been the level of communication and just the fact that they need they learn that they have to talk about the disabilities. Could you tell me about that a little bit and how you deal with it when you meet with them?
Sure. So there's different levels of amputees. And so there's a BK, which is a below the knee. There's an AK above the knee. And there's a hip dysarthric, which has part or all of their hip, but no leg, no stump at all. And then a hemipelvectomy, which is no hip at all or leg. So there's different degrees, and it's so important for them to learn at every level a sense of balance. So when they become a patient and a fall risk in an unfamiliar environment on medication and coming out of surgery, how it affects at every level. A below the knee will expel 30 to 40% more energy just to walk. An above the knee is, I think, like 50 or 60. And a hip and a hemi is more like 70 to 80% more energy just to function and walk in the everyday environment. So that alone, you know, and the different prosthetics are different weights. You know, they're anywhere from 6-7 pounds as a BK to anywhere from 13 pounds, which is my prosthetic, and they can be as heavy as 18 pounds. So that's a lot more energy. That's exhausting to just function. And then you're coming out of surgery and you're not feeling well, and you know, it's all these factors, and these students really need to understand all of that. So I give them some websites. I give them some tips of what to look at on YouTube to see what amputees at each level, you know, what they can and cannot do, and how they have some life hacks. We call them life hacks, disability hacks, of how to get around doing certain things. Pinterest is a great app for that. If you type in disability hacks, and it shows all of us in the community, we come up with these great ideas and we put them on Pinterest. And it's a way for us as a community of amputees to share, hey, I got around, I can do this by, you know, figuring out this with a bunch of duct tape. So it's a great way to communicate and make them better at what it is that they do.
So another thing, I think, especially with the freshmen and sophomores, maybe they're hesitant to bring up the specific disability. Did you find that to be the case? And could you talk about how you bring that out of them?
Yes, it very often is the case. I mean, they're young students, I get it, and they don't know me. And often, especially, well, I think for both simulations, most of the time I don't wear my prosthetic leg because I want them to talk about that elephant in the room. Having been born an amputee, I'm much more comfortable at my age to discuss it. And I tell them, you know, so I noticed nobody transferred me to the bed. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody looked at my stump to check the residual limb's skin. Is it blistered? Is it red? Is it swollen? Nobody checked the circulation of it because lack of circulation, especially if they're a diabetic, could cause even more problems, or COPD, that could cause more problems. So I say, now is the time. And it is an awkward conversation sometimes. Now is the time. This is your safe playing field to have these awkward questions, to say the wrong things. And in my lifetime, I have heard a whole gamut of correct flubs, you know, of how to talk about it. But this is a safe space. And the amputees that you're going to serve in the hospitals and rehabs that you're going to work in, they are going to look to you because you are the professional with the degree from Villanova. And they're going to act like you are supposed to know something. And you're not going to. But, hey, that's okay, too. Let them know that you hear their concern of, I'm a fall risk, and I can't get back in my leg, my prosthetics, for 3 more weeks. What do I do? It's okay not to have an answer, but know that it takes a village. Go to occupational therapy. Go to physical therapy. Go to psych. Go to case management. Get them a temporary wheelchair. It takes a village, and draw upon that so you do look like, you know, the professional that you are. And it's all right to say, you know what, I don't really have that answer right now, but I'll check with some of my colleagues and I will get back to you. That's all a person wants to hear.
So it sounds like there's kind of two issues. One is just acknowledging that there's a disability, and then secondly is they might not have the answer and they need to be okay with that, but assure you that they're going to get back to you with the answer.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know, what do you get out of working with the students in the program?
Every class is different. Some of the students want to, you know, grab my leg if I have it with me, and they want to ask 1,000 questions, and some are just quieter about it. I don't know for what reasons. But I get the satisfaction of being able to have a voice. You know, growing up over 40 years ago in society, you know, kids were pulled away. Parents ignored me. People let doors shut in front of me. And in the last 10, 15 years, society, it's not perfect, and we all know that. But you see us as amputees on TV and in print ads and in films and, you know, in a wide variety of social media where we're not, you know, stuck in institutions, and we are allowed to have a voice. We are allowed to share our stories. And just that communication between these students and the staff has been just a wonderful experience for me, because if they wouldn't have gotten to know me, they wouldn't have not known my story about when I had my children and how I had my children. And therefore, the students would not have had that one-on-one live experience with a real amputee to make them better at what it is, you know, who they are and what they're trying to accomplish, and make it easier for the next amputee that wants to be a mommy. And I stress that first and foremost with that simulation, congratulate them on being a mommy. You know, I know it's the elephant in the room, but deal with them being a mommy first. You know, and that's a whole psychological gamut of coming off of, you know, sometimes a C-section and just the hormones that change after you've had a child, you know, on top of being an amputee. And it is something that needs to be discussed, but the satisfaction of just being able to make them better at what they do, to make it easier for the next generation of amputees, I think really has to be it for me.
And any closing thoughts before we say goodbye?
I'm just extremely grateful to Villanova and my own I work full time, so I'm grateful to my advocacy group that I work with here in Reading, that finds the immense, unique, you know, what these students learn. I mean, it's a unique situation that I'm allowed to be able to partake of, and they allow me to take off of work, no problem, to come and do disability awareness. And I'm very, very grateful. And I think it's just a win-win-win situation all around. And I look forward to doing it for many more years. So I'm very grateful to the staff.
Okay. And I know they're grateful to you, and we're grateful to you also for speaking with us about all of this. Do you consider yourself to be a disabled person?
Yes and no. And, you know, I put my leg on, like you put your shoes on and you put your teeth in your head and you just go on a good day. But I think when I forget to charge the battery in my microprocessor knee, you know, or as funky as that sounds, you know, and it stops working, or I have skin breakdown and it's pinching me and it hurts every time I take a step, then I feel disabled. When I just can't get up and go, then I feel like a person with a disability. But I mean, as a kid, I mean, I grew up in a hardware store and I skateboarded and I still ride a bike, and I've taught Cub Scouts for 12 years, and I've had children when they were like, oh, you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, I seriously called Germany and Los Angeles and England and emailed dozens of doctors, you know, 18, 19 years ago, trying to find anybody else that had children in my condition, and it just wasn't there. So I've learned a lot about myself and the strength of who I am, and I'm actually grateful for the life that I have, because I've been able to learn so much from the new amputees that come into the community in our closed, you know, Facebook sites. But I'm also able to pay it forward to newbies. We call them newbies. I'm a lifer, and they're newbies, you know, the newer ones that come along. And it's just this great family of people all over the world, literally all over the world, that I'm friends with, that are prosthetists from India and Israel and Italy, that sometimes FaceTime me to their new hemipelvectomy patients. And so I had this whole entire family and this wonderful life that I wouldn't have otherwise, you know, have been able to be a part of. And it's just, it's a great exchange, because we uplift each other when we are having problems. And it's you know, I know my husband loves me, and my parents and my sister and my boys love me, but it's just not the same. And every amputee will say that. It's just, they can love you to the moon and back, but it's just not the same thing. Until you walk in that one shoe and you get it.
We'd like to thank the faculty and students at the College of Nursing at Villanova for inviting us to their campus. We'd also like to thank the patients who volunteered with the program for sharing their amazing stories and helping all nursing students recognize the value of empathy and straight talk in nursing. Visit us at nursecast.com for more details on the next episode, and subscribe and share our podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as always, send us feedback at love@nursecast.com to let us know what you think about our podcast.